With that, the next item on the agenda is Department of the Navy, 090358. Mr. McGinnis.
Gentlemen, before we begin, I just want to provide just a brief summary of what has occurred over the past month. You may recall that this project was scheduled to be on the agenda last month, but was pulled last minute at the request of the Navy so that they could explore, along with staff here and our council, some of the legal issues regarding whether or not the Navy is required to obtain VMRC permits. And while there's still some disagreement with that, it is our position that they do for these types of projects, and we'll continue to move forward with this one. This is being added back onto this month's agenda again at the last minute by the request of the Navy. The Commission received a letter on Friday requesting that this be put back before you. And of course, we were prepared to brief that last month, so we'll do that again here this month. But this project here is Department of the Navy 09-0358. They are requesting after-the-fact authorization for the replacement of approximately 300 linear feet of what they call the CEP-102 and CEP-111 bulkheads located on the south side of Pier 1 at Naval Station Norfolk, situated along Hampton Roads in the city of Norfolk. The proposed project also calls for the installation of approximately 300 linear feet of riprap bulkhead tow stabilization overlaid by an articulated concrete mat extending a maximum of 47 feet channelward of the adjacent bulkheads. And I'll brief you a little bit about a slight change with regards to that concrete mat the Navy has proposed in their letter to the Commissioner on Friday. This is Naval Station Norfolk here on the map, and the location is at the very southern end of their waterfront property there, like I said, below Pier 1. Let's see here. And the project extends approximately from just below Pier 1 down. That's the CP-102, and then CP-111 runs back up into this basin here. This is actually a 2009 photo taken in the early winter, and you can actually see in this photograph, this is just before the unauthorized bulkhead replacement took place, but you can see that they were doing work on the upland, doing excavations behind the bulkhead, and this would have been just prior to that new bulkhead being installed. Again, in that alignment there. This is one of the drawings we received from the Navy. The green line on the screen there represents where the bulkhead existed prior to last year when they constructed the new one, approximately the alignment shown by the red line here. That bulkhead, the replacement bulkhead along with the fender system, are currently installed. The Navy has proposed to also install a riprap bulkhead tow stabilization. It would approximately cover the area highlighted in yellow and would extend approximately 47 feet on this side of the CP-102 bulkhead, and I believe it's 35 feet channelward of the CP-111 bulkhead. Again, it's just cross sections provided by the Navy. Again, in green on the top there is the existing bulkhead prior to replacement. Red shows the current unauthorized bulkhead and fender system. Yellow is the fill of rock that's being proposed. And then also in blue here is what was being proposed as an articulated concrete mat. In the letter that we received from the Navy on Friday, which is item number 8 in your packet, it does propose that they could remove that matting as a means, I guess, to provide more habitat value with the rock itself. It was something we had discussed in a meeting that the representatives of the Navy had with us here, the staff, as well as the Commissioner and the Council. back on June 7th. We as staff will get to that, but we don't feel that significantly changes the issues here with regard to the project. The bottom section just highlighted altogether is that CEP 111, and you can see there that the encroachment is a little bit smaller. I believe it says 27-foot encroachment there, not the 35 that I had quoted earlier. This may be a little bit difficult to see on the screen up there, but this shows the existing depths and roughly the project depth to the dredge basin here off of Pier 1 is 45 feet. And so you can see that if you go back to this cross section, the bulkhead, the new bulkhead that was installed to a depth of 45 feet. And, it's fairly standard practice that when you install bulkheads, you typically drive to twice the depth of the depth you have in front of that bulkhead. So in this case, it would a properly designed bulkhead, in our opinion, would be designed to a 90-foot depth. The Navy has decided to propose this construction and proceed with the bulkhead because they felt that by placing the rock immediately channelward of the bulkhead, that rock would provide sufficient mass to support the bulkhead at the lesser depth of the 45-foot, which would prevent the toe of the bulkhead from slipping out and failing. Unfortunately, staff believes it's an enormous encroachment over state-owned submerged land, and we expressed that to them when we were first notified that the bulkhead construction had commenced approximately 3 weeks after they submitted their JPA, even before we had a chance really to fully review it or do a public notice. Just provide some of the photographs. This was a photo provided by the Navy that showed the conditions of the previous bulkhead. Certainly there was some signs of distress and failure, and we don't discount the fact that it likely needed to be replaced. And even within the alignment the current bulkhead is in, which was approximately 2 to 3 feet channelward of this bulkhead here now, what we are suggesting is that we don't feel it was properly designed to an appropriate depth, and therefore resulting in the need for this rock, which we do feel is excessive. This is a photograph taken back, I believe it was in March, earlier this year, showing what it looks like now. Completely new structure, and again with the fender system installed on the outside. And then again, looking up into the basin, this is what's there on the CEP 111 bulkhead. So let me go back to cross sections. Provide you a little bit of the background on what had happened as well. We received the application from the Navy last year, towards the end of March. It was March 20th, actually, and approximately 3 weeks later, on April 14th, we received a phone call from the Navy, some of their environmental staff, notifying us that work had begun on the bulkhead. At that time, staff was led to believe, or assumed, I guess, that the work was being done because of imminent failure of the existing bulkhead. We discussed with the Navy at that time what information we would need to process an after-the-fact application for the bulkhead. That was all done verbally over the course of the following months. Unfortunately, we received little information from the Navy. We had asked for an update at one point by email when we found out the Army Corps of Engineers had scheduled a site visit with the Navy that staff had not been invited to. Finally, in September, we did receive a short email with an attached engineering justification that discussed some of the alternatives to the project, but really didn't discuss the need for the Navy commencing the project without a BMRC permit. Unfortunately, after additional time that had elapsed, staff did send on late October a letter to the Navy formally requesting a meeting to discuss the issues surrounding the project as well as the information we felt was necessary for us to continue with our review and ultimately bring this here before you as it is today. We did finally were able to schedule and have a meeting with the Navy in mid-December. At that meeting, staff was represented by myself. We had representative from VIMS attend as well. And the Navy had various representation from both their environmental and engineering side as well as legal counsel. And shortly thereafter that meeting, we did finally start to receive some of the information we had requested and some cooperation from the Navy in providing information that we had discussed during that meeting as well. That meeting also, the Navy had brought to us a new design, the riprap here off the CEP 102 bulkhead, which has been pulled back to 47 feet, was originally proposed to 65 feet. And the Navy felt that was, by pulling that back, that they were somehow lessening the impact. And while we agree that it is significantly smaller in its encroachment, it's still 47 feet, which is significantly larger than any other project we would prefer to recommend approval of or approve at the staff level. But we have moved forward with that request because that's what they ultimately feel is necessary at this point, and we bring that to you here today so that you all can determine whether or not that's appropriate. Also at that meeting was the Navy's contractor, Precon Marine. We discussed during that meeting with them, asked them questions as to why they felt it was appropriate to proceed with the bulkhead construction without a VMRC permit. They insinuated that they had assumed that the Navy had taken care of all the permits and that they had been given a notice to proceed from the Navy and were working under the assumption that everything was in order. Staff is a little disturbed by that because this same contractor has been involved in some other violations as well. And I believe in the evaluation that was previously provided to you all, we do point to the fact that they were involved with an Army Corps of Engineer project to install a temporary offshore work platform for the maintenance activities that were being done in Virginia Beach to the 42nd Street stormwater outfall. While the maintenance of that outfall did not require a permit from the commission, construction of that trestle would have, and Precon was the contractor on that project. That project was brought before the commission in May of 2008 as a page 3 item, and at that time there was no assessment of a civil charge to the contractor. And there certainly was some shared blame with the Corps in that case as well, though. The Virginia Institute of Marine Science, as I mentioned, was represented at that meeting in December, and they have provided comments to us with regard to the project. And I'll read verbatim from our evaluation to you just to make sure that all the information they provided to us is on the record. But their report dated May 19, 2010, indicated that the unauthorized bulkhead was not properly designed to counterbalance itself against the load of the upland soils and associated infrastructure, and that the placement of the riprap at the toe of the bulkhead to provide the mass necessary to counterbalance the bulkhead would result in the conversion over a quarter of an acre of native sedimentary substrate to non-native rock habitat. Them stated that this conversion will result in the displacement of infauna worms, shellfish, and the loss of prey for the fish and crabs that feed on them. Their comments included stating that their preferred alternative would to be replace the bulkhead in place or immediately channelward to eliminate most of the proposed impacts to subaqueous bottom. Staff did not receive any other comments or objections from other agencies or individuals. We did receive a letter from the Virginia Port Authority writing as an adjacent property owner, just informing us they had no problems with the project and only requested that the Navy notify them when any of the work is to commence on areas near their property. And to get into our summary and recommendation, while the channelward encroachment of the unauthorized replacement bulkheads itself would normally be considered acceptable to staff. The Navy's choice to short sheet the bulkhead design for budgetary reasons essentially forces an enormous encroachment over state-owned submerged land by the proposed riprap concrete mat toe stabilization structure. Again, the toe stabilization mat on top has been proposed to be removed, though we have not received any drawings from the Navy to that effect. The encroachment itself does not change. It's still 47 feet channel worth the CP 102 bulkhead. Staff believes that this design is inconsistent with past commission permits for similar commercial or industrial bulkhead projects. It would not have been supported had our review been conducted prior to the bulkhead's unauthorized installation. Staff is concerned that if the newly constructed bulkheads are not properly reconstructed or stabilized, they could be subject to future failure. Staff is unable to recommend approval of a project primarily designed as a cost-saving measure for the Navy to the detriment of the state-owned Sebaqueous lands. The Commission, as stewards, are charged with protecting under the public trust. Accordingly, staff recommends that the Navy's request be denied and that the Navy be directed to reconstruct the unauthorized bulkheads in an appropriate manner with the proper sheet length. Staff acknowledges the legal difficulties in compelling the federal government to reconstruct the bulkheads, but feel that this recommendation is consistent with how the matter would be handled if the applicant were a private entity, or any other entity of that matter. Should the Commission elect to approve the after-the-fact bulkheads and the proposed riprap, however, on the advice of counsel, it appears the Commission is unable to impose a civil charge upon the Navy, since they are under no obligation to pay such a charge. The Commission does have the authority to seek civil charges against the contractor, Precon Marine Incorporated, pursuant to Section 20.2.12.13b of the Code of Virginia. In this matter, staff would recommend civil charges for the contractor for each of the CEP 102 and CEP 111 bulkheads, taking into consideration a major degree of noncompliance and a significant degree of environmental impact. This recommendation takes into account Precon Marine's familiarity with VMRC permits as a local marine contractor, their past violation history as previously mentioned, and the consequent encroachment and environmental impact to state-owned submerged land resulting from the installation of a bulkhead design which would not likely have been authorized had the Navy and Precon Marine attempted to obtain VMRC permit prior to construction. This civil charge would be in lieu of any further enforcement activity the Commission might pursue against the contractor. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I did kind of gloss over the Navy's letter from last Friday, but again, the letter essentially requested that this item be brought back to you. They felt that removing the concrete articulated mat somehow lessened the impact, and they felt that it was no significant impact to state-owned submerged land, which we disagree with. But with that, I'll leave it up to you all.
Questions of Mr. McGinnis by members of the commission. Thank you, Bill.
I believe the Navy is represented by people from both their environmental as well as their public works staff, and I believe the contractor is represented here today as well.
Thank you, sir. Is the Navy here?
Yes, sir.
Commander, see, please. Raise your right hand for me, sir.
Yes,
you solemnly swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Yes,
state your name for the record, please, sir, and your
rank. Commander Chad Brooks, Commander, the Director of Facilities Engineering and Acquisition for Naval Station Norfolk.
Thank you. And I'm also joined today by, as Mr. McGinnis said, staff from our environmental group, construction management, engineering, and also representation from the contractor, Precon Marine. Sir, I appreciate the opportunity to be on your agenda today.
Good to have you here.
Thank you, sir. And the willingness of your staff to work with us on this project. I know this project is being discussed in a broader context of permitting procedures, but I really appreciate the chance to tell you about it today and help you know some of our perspective on the project. as you've heard, sir. First, I want to, in addressing this slide, this appropriate slide to speak to, characterize the project rather than as a replacement than as a repair. The imminent risk of failure that Mr. McGinnis discussed is accurate. This bulkhead was constructed in 1943, at that time with a water depth of only 10 feet. And over the years, following construction of Pier 1 in 1952, the water depth increased to 28 feet due to erosion, dredging activities, prop activities, to the point that the corner of that bulkhead was unstable. And for us, there's an operational impact in as much as we could no longer use that bulkhead for material laydown or other operations incident to the use of Pier 1. And further, that's the location where the Craney Island fuel line enters the base. So any failure of that particular bulkhead would be particularly catastrophic. We could not afford to have a failure in that location of the base.
What is fuel there, sir?
The fuel coming from Craney Island is used for a variety of purposes. It's pumped to the airfield for use of our aircraft, as well as the recovered fuel for use for energy generation at the steam plant. So our desire there was to execute repair quickly. However, recognizing the need to minimize impact to the environment in that location. As shown, the 45-foot sheet piles were not designed with the intention of simply avoiding costs. That is a factor, certainly. We're constrained by budget as much as anybody else. However, this repair was intended for the purpose of stabilizing the bulkhead, recognizing that in the future, complete replacement of Pier 1 is anticipated, in part in preparation imminently for the arrival of USNS Comfort from Baltimore, and then later for other berthing requirements. And also, just as part of our pier recapitalization, this pier, as you heard, was built in 43, so it's due for replacement. Likewise, there was issue of the third crossing potentially entering the base or joining the base in that location, so it was uncertain to us exactly where the new Pier 1 would even have to be. So our focus was to execute a repair within our budget constraint that would be potentially removed within a matter of years in anticipation of Pier 1 construction.
Was that conveyed to the staff during the course of the discussions?
In the December meetings, we had that type of discussion, yes, sir, that rather than characterize the job as a bulkhead replacement, we're characterizing it as a repair, yes, sir. Right. And so, therefore, with the 45-foot sheet pile, which really is remain in place formwork for our concrete placement, the toe stabilization is necessary because the full dredge depth as shown is only 45 feet. So this mass that we're showing we believe is the appropriate amount for the minimum safety factor for that corner of the bulkhead. And as you heard, we've attempted to incorporate the staff recommendation to reduce the footprint as much as possible from the initial recommendation or initial design down to what's shown here, is simply the maximum extent of 47 feet. Now, this project is consistent with other projects permitted by BMRC. We have a similar job at our W305-306 bulkhead, which is in the vicinity of our piers 8 through 10, which extends out 37 feet. So it's comparable in the nature of the construction that we're doing. And likewise, though, recognizing the concern about the infauna worms and other animals in that location, we recommended removing the mat as a possibility of creating habitat or where sedimentation would land and create habitat. However, if the staff doesn't believe that would resolve that concern, we'd like to keep the mat, frankly, for the added mass and the possibility of retaining this stabilization material in place with the rock wash.
Well, let me ask you this, Commander. How long do you anticipate this stopgap, for lack of a better term, repair to be in place before you make a conscious decision to repair it to what would be acceptable, I guess, for lack of a better term, normal engineering standards?
Yes, sir. The replacement of Pier 1 will drive that decision. And the relieving platform could be constructed as part of that project then. And I believe it's shown in one of your diagrams to show what the relieving platform design would look like. That's unknown to us. The nature of the military construction program is uncertain. But we have requested that replacement within the next 10 years. So this would get us to that point, being prepared for the Pier 1 replacement. I would agree again that the contractor did have a notice to proceed from the government in advance of having received a permit, so that there is a breakdown of communications, which we've expressed to the staff, and that our construction team did authorize the contractor to begin prior to having the DMRC permit.
What caused that breakdown of communication? I don't know who was responsible for it, but is it an unfamiliar area with the process that we have, or what?
Not with the DMRC process, no, sir. It was a lack of understanding on the part of the construction manager that, in addition to the Army Corps of Engineers permit, that the DMRC permit would normally be expected as well prior to authorizing started work. So in that case, recognizing that error, we came and requested the after the fact permit. The only other items I'd like to add are that we'll continue to work with the staff to mitigate impacts. However, again, just to emphasize, we believe that this is the most minimal impact we can have in terms of the toe stabilization material without compromising the integrity of these repair sheet piles. And again, I leave the issue of the articulated mat for discussion if that's the recommendation of the staff and the decision of the commission.
Question to the commander. Mr. Tanker?
You mentioned cost savings. I mean, so how much of a savings is there with the method that you prefer versus that which VIMS prefers?
Well, it's significant, sir. This project was awarded for $7.2 million, and that's at a 45-foot sheet pile used as stay-in-place formwork. I would anticipate the project, given a more elaborate method of construction, to be almost double that, frankly, for a 90-foot sheet pile with any kind of a relieving platform, which would have been well beyond the capability of the Navy to fund this fiscal year.
Mr. Schick?
Was it your intention from the beginning of the construction of this emergency repair or stopgap repair to place the rock in front of the bulkhead? Was that the original design? Or is this something that was thought of after the fact?
Well, certainly as our divers evaluated the degree of deflection of the toe of the existing bulkhead, the need became apparent for additional toe stabilization and design. And with the placement of this formwork, there was an expectation to require toe stabilization. As I mentioned, we did another bulkhead project just up to the north of this one. So yes, there was an expectation that for these piles there needed to be some degree of toe stabilization.
Further questions?
Yes.
Mr. Fox?
What is the function of the articulated concrete mat?
Yes, sir. It's twofold. It adds mass to the riprap to stabilize the sheet pile itself. Further, it ensures that, as we've seen over the years with the displacement of sediment from prop wash or from scouring or other activity in that area, that it will contain the riprap material and prevent it from sloping down into the berth, affecting future dredging operations or ship operations.
So what happens if you remove don't install the concrete mat?
Certainly increases the risk that the riprap would move over the years. It would just create a maintenance requirement for us to inspect and replace the riprap as necessary during this period of time.
Mr. Schick?
The engineering for this project, was that done in-house or was that done on an outside service? The contractor, were they involved ahead of time?
No, it was done in-house, sir. And in fact, the designer is here for questions if you have any specific design questions.
Dr. McConaughey.
What was the depth of the bulkhead that you replaced? Was it?
It's 45 feet.
Okay, we never replaced.
Excuse me.
Let me ask Mr. Tice to come forward so we can address any technical questions.
Come forward, sir. Sure, his right hand. So I'm just swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. State your name and who you represent, please. Proceed.
This was never really intended to be a replacement project. When we received 1391, which is our funding document to proceed with design, the intent was the mud line was at minus 20. Years ago in 83, a report was done by Lanta that says if you maintain water elevation at 20, you've got enough toe stabilization to where, you know, the sheet pile is going to stay there. It's a concrete sheet pile, and they're 2 foot on center, or 2 foot wide. What happened is that due to previous contracts, or previous construction and dredging and everything else, those gaps had opened up. So what we intended to do originally was use sheet pile in front of the bulkhead, tremoline concrete behind it, and basically be done with it. When we started design and got it to actually, it was an in-house design, but it was done by an A&E firm. When they started their actual field work, they realized that the toe now in some areas, especially around the corner, had gone down to minus 30. So we didn't have that 20-foot maintained, which all our records had shown. So then we went into design phase and said, what can we do within budget to do what we have to do to stabilize this bulkhead? We knew the follow-on projects were coming back, and if you looked at the picture, I don't know how to work it, but every new pier has wharves adjacent to it as the leading platforms, because we have to maintain that 30-foot depth pretty much for all the new ships come in and everything else. So most now that you'll see is, if you go one more back, one more. You can, if I can go over and point. What do you press?
The little red button.
Okay. What you see here is the wharf. Every new pier, there's a pier 2 that was, piers, the old piers 22 and 21 were replaced with a new pier that you'll see over here. It comes with its wharf. Because the existing sheet pile or bulkheads of all our piers were only designed for a dredge depth of 10, all of them are in imminent failure when we go any deeper than 20 foot. So what we're doing is this was a stopgap method. We knew we needed to do a repair. We thought we were just going to basically fill in the holes, basically, with the formwork that you see, the steel sheet pile. We had to have the mast because we couldn't do a whole lot of underwater work. So the intent was just to fill all the holes and wait until Pier 1 was going to be constructed, and we would then continue on the wharf. We have a similar issue that eventually this whole bulkhead here is going to have that same problem because that's still at 20. Pier 3 on the north, we're not doing anything because Pier 3 is actually being scheduled to be replaced within the next 3 years. It will continue the wharf on around that corner. So they kept calling this a replacement bulkhead, but it really isn't. It's just filling in the holes. It's just, because of the size, it's just a lot of mass. So I don't know exactly how to proceed, but it wasn't designed as a replacement bulkhead. It was, the original sheet pile was only going to go 4 or 5 foot in. But because it's nothing but muck, we had to get it deep enough, because otherwise once we put the tremie concrete in, it would blow out the bottom. So we had to add mass there, because the existing filters wouldn't hold it.
Further questions? I'm sorry, Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If this is a short-term project that's ultimately going to be superseded by the construction of Pier 1, can you speak to the necessity of having this, all this additional mass and encroachment associated with the riprap as a short-term need? In other words, if this is just going to be here for a matter of a few years potentially, why the need for all this additional encroachment?
Yes, sir. The uncertainty of when that new project will come necessitates stabilizing this toe. For our analysis, there is no safety factor without the toe stabilization. That with the pressures measured and entered into our software would indicate that at this point, if there were further erosion of that very poor quality material in place, that we would be right back to some risk of failure even with these new sheet piles. So the toe stabilization is part of the completed project to have a safe bulkhead. And as I mentioned, the failure risk is not just the, you know, loss of operational space, but in my view, the cranial and fuel line need a safe one.
And if I can go on a little bit further, the intent of this too, and the reason why we put the mat and the stone is there, is when we do end up doing the wharf as a repair, all that riprap will then be taken up and then put adjacent to it, similar to what we've done on every single wharf repair we have. Underneath the wharf, they actually drive sheet pile under the first line of piles, and that area is built up in the Pier 2 case up to minus 5. So all that area underneath that wharf has been backfilled. So we were just kind of carrying on with what had been approved in the past and what designs have been done in the past so that we can minimize cost, because all this stuff will then be reused. Our other concern was if we did a full bulkhead, we needed a whole new tieback system which would encroach landside a lot more. And then when Pier 1 did get constructed, we're then going to have to tear all that up because it all affects the construction of Pier 1. I mean, it's just not driving sheets and letting them stay. We just they would have been like 200 foot sheets, and the size of the sheet, we were talking at least, well, it's actually 150 ton or 10 tons per lineal foot of steel in order to resist the bending moment, and that didn't include the anchor at the top. So, I mean, it cost was the driving factor, but this was a stopgap repair. It wasn't a permanent repair. The permanent repair will be a wharf similar to what you see north of Pier 1.
Follow, Mr. Chairman. Then if the long-term plans go forward, just to be clear, this additional encroachment would be removed?
At least water side of the wharf. The wharf's 28, roughly 30 foot wide. We would remove the rubble outside of that. We'd have to remove all of it initially in order to drive the piles. But then we'd probably put the sheet pile back in. We've got a diagram that's not represented here. But then that would be used to get rid of it.
Mr. Tiger?
The gas line in this photo, could you explain again where the gas line is?
Yes, Craney Island is on the other side. There's two fuel lines. Originally there were two fuel lines, and they come in, get you to point around, right here. About 10 years ago, one of the fuel lines was actually replaced. So all the oil and waste from the base now goes back to Craney Island for treatment. So all the JP5 comes from Craney Island up here. They also offload on barges down here a little bit. But one line is the JP5 line that services the air station, and then all the oily waste from the base goes back through the second line.
Further questions? Thank you, sir. Is the contractor represented?
Yes, sir.
Come forward, please. Raise your right hand. Solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Can you state your name, please?
My name is Scott Root.
Can you please explain to me why you undertook the work without a BMRC permit?
We undertook the work because we asked the Navy if we were able to proceed with the work, and they assured us they had all the permits in place they needed to. We were informed that they were covered under the Army Corps engineers, or they believed to be covered under the Army Corps engineers' nationwide national permit. That's why the work proceeded.
Do you understand now that by asking them whether the permits are in place does not relieve you of the responsibility of ensuring that the necessary permits are in place?
Yes, sir. I believe that the Navy had their permits. I trusted that they had permits. It was a mistake on my part. But yes, I do now know that we need to make sure that the permits are actually seen.
Questions from members of the commission?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Schick?
You know, if it wasn't the Navy, if somebody had said that they had the Army Corps nationwide permit, would you have asked them if they had BMRC permits?
Yes, sir.
And did you ask the Navy if they had BMRC permits?
No, I did not. Myself.
Based on your former experience with the federal government, didn't you think that it might be necessary to ask the Navy if they had BMRC permits?
Myself, I don't have a lot of experience with the federal government. Our staff at Precon Marine, we have not had an abundance of amount of dealings with the federal government recently. To tell the truth, my assumption was, and I know it was an assumption and it was a mistake, was that that the Navy had federal jurisdiction and that the BMRC didn't realize that the BMRC had jurisdiction there. That was an after-the-fact thought. After I knew they did not have the BMRC permit, that was what was brought up. Now, I know now that the BMRC has jurisdiction in that area.
Follow up, if I may. Did anyone at the Navy tell you that they had federal jurisdiction and a BMRC permit was not required?
No, sir.
Okay. Further questions? Commander, anyone else from your shop wish to be heard? Okay. Is there anyone here in opposition to the project? Well, I must say that I'm a little uncomfortable with this case in general. The Navy has had a long-standing, great working relationship with Tidewater. Provides a lot of jobs, does a lot of good things. I mean, I could go on and on and on from a patriotic perspective as far as what I think about our armed services. I think what has occurred here, I think staff has done a great job detecting and assessing what appears to be a violation of Virginia state law. I think, based on council's discussion that we've had, meetings that we've had, that there may be some ultimate disagreement, or I don't know, disagreement's the right word, but discussion as to jurisdiction, as to who can do what, when, where, and how. Having said that, my concern is more futuristic than it is at the present time as to the relationship that we have with the Navy as far as design is concerned, and when this stopgap repair becomes a permanent repair, I would hope that we would have significant input from all to make sure that the what's best for the Commonwealth and best for the United States meshes. That's basically where I'm coming from. I think the contractor, we could do whatever we wanted as far as civil penalties concerned, but I think what we have before us today are three credible individuals that are telling the truth, and did what they thought was correct. I don't think you get a pass after this one, though, as far as this is concerned, especially from a contractor's perspective. Having said that, the matter is before the commission. Mr. Taggart.
Yes, sir. I agree with your sentiments wholeheartedly. But in this day and age, given the events of this past year, process is important. And I hope that if we so-called maybe give it a pass this time, that process won't be forgotten in the future. Because to do things like they need to be done in the long term is important for the Navy, for the environment, for the citizens of the Commonwealth of the United States. I agree with you, sir.
Further comment? Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just find this case to be very unfortunate. You know, in the end, I mean, the state's being asked to approve a significant impact that it would not normally recommend or approve, as you heard our staff testify. And it all could have been avoided had the case been subjected to an appropriate public interest review. So from a process standpoint, as Mr. Tanker points out, I think there's a very significant failure here. And I just find it to be very unfortunate because now, as a consequence of what was basically a shortcoming in planning and permitting, the state's being asked to approve a very significant impact that's well outside of its normal management practices. So I think it's unfortunate. I think to your point, I would hope as we go forward in the relationship that this would encourage a new level of dialogue and discussion in the planning process so that future repairs are made consistent with an appropriate public interest review. Because I think the ultimate impacts are just something unfortunate from the state perspective.
Further comments, Mr. Holland, then Dr. McConaughey. If you will hold that motion, I'll go ahead and hear the comment first, Mr. Schick, then Dr. McConaughey, and I'll be back to you, Mr. Holland.
I'd just like to further say I know the Department of the Navy has more than qualified staff that understands the full implications of what's been done and what needs to be done, and the communications within the Navy hopefully will also progress to get to the right people that know what need to be done to make this thing a lot easier. Because when we go to the public and the first thing they come to us and say, large corporations did this, the federal government does that, you know, and now I have to take the brunt of that. And I think everybody needs to be treated equally.
Thank you. Dr. McConaughey?
Yeah, well, I agree with all my colleagues' comments as well, and that the process really needs to go forward. And my biggest concern is if this peer replacement may not be happening for 10 years, what's going to happen if this starts to fail again? You know, hopefully the Navy will be coming back early on and say, hey, it's starting to fail, what are we going to do now? I mean, that's my concern, is that the stopgap repair may or may not last 10 years, and given the Navy's schedule, it may be more than 10 years.
Well, one thing that I can say, and counsel, if you would like to interject, can also is, by virtue of this project, we have had significant dialogue with the Navy pertaining to a lot of different things, and you know, sometimes from something that may be errant can come good, and I think it has. I think we've opened up a dialogue, we've opened up a debate that's going to be involving legal counsel as to a lot of different issues or whatever. It certainly has not been, the Navy has been very, very agreeable and forthcoming with information and discussion. You know, although this case is before us today as an after the fact, the dialogue and the relationship, I think, has been improved through something that's before us today. So I just wanted to get that going out on the table. Mr. Holland.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with all my colleagues, especially your last comments. And I think everyone here today has learned a good lesson. If we do have a failure or anything in the future, we get back to our staff commission. We all work together, the contractors, the Navy, and the DMRC, to come up with the right project. That being said, I would move that we approve the after-the-fact permit.
No, second. Second by Mr. Schick. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, gentlemen, for a job well done.